Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, it's that time again for Successipes. We've got your recipe for success in business and living, and I'm your host, Lori Wilk, and our show today is live. This is a show that's set to be absolutely amazing. My guest today is involved in an area of autism and dealing with autism and helping people in areas of their brain. Essentially, she's an artist, she's an academic, a brainiac, she's fun, she's a healer, and she's out there. She's been a parent of 8 children, of which 4 have been in the spectrum of autism, and she now has 8 grandchildren. She holds 2 board certifications in neurofeedback. She's working now on a PhD in clinical psychophysiology, so everything about the brain. A neurofeedback specialist, Lynette Louise, is on the cutting edge of treating autism and other brain-related disorders. She's been working on this in over 20 years. So, Lynette Louise, welcome to Successipes.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you sharing your audience with me. It's a blast to be here, and we're going to have some fun.
Absolutely. Can you start us from the beginning of this 20-year journey and how it all got going?
How fast do you want me to talk? No, I'm just kidding.
No, okay. You got a whole half an hour, all for you. All for you.
Okay, so you know, it depends on the perspective I take on which way I tell the story, just because there's so many legs to this story. But essentially, I had challenges as a child. I grew up in an abusive environment, and I also had challenges. So it was always a chicken or the egg question. You know, I'm saying it's your fault to my family, and they're saying it's your fault to me. And so we sort of had this really difficult beginning together, and I left home, and I got married really young, and I had all kinds of issues. And then as it started to sort of settle, and I figured out that there was both, you know, that it was I had a challenged childhood, but I also had some issues of my own and tried to heal myself. I always wanted to spread that, and I was looking to adopt and that sort of thing. Meanwhile, I'm getting married and divorced and married and divorced. So it was messy. And life is messy, and I think that's part of what I bring to the story. I have a really unique circumstance in that I learned how to help everybody in a huge sort of chaotic mess. And I had sexual abuse in my past, I had physical abuse in my past, I had Asperger's, I had at one point I was told I had schizophrenia. I mean, it was just, there was such a big mess. And then I started adopting more mess. And so the challenge was to heal, but the value that I have at this point in my life, way later, with all the, you know, the certifications and the degrees and the kids that got better and are off the spectrum and me all better and all those things. At the end of the story, what I bring for people and what I think I bring to the world and what I really want to help people do is heal inside the mess. And the reason for that is we have this horrible habit. We have this horrible habit of going, oh, I can't understand it. It's too messy. So I'm going to take this disorder and I'm going to stick it in a laboratory. And when I stick it in the laboratory, then I'll calm down all of the distractors and I'll be able to figure out what's going on. But you just subtracted the problem. So you can't figure out what's going on if you take something and you separate it. Now, we do this in every walk of life. We do it in business. We do it in Hollywood. I've always been told, no, 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 pick your thing. Pick your thing. Which one are you? Are you the brain person? Are you the parent? Are you the doctor? Are you the performer? Are you the stand-up comedian? What are you? Right?
And I'm like, oh, so did you have to focus? You mean the word focus? They ask you to focus?
Well, what? Yes.
On one thing?
Yes, but it's the rest of the sentence that matters. Everyone needs to be able to focus. Learning how to focus, it's like clarity that gives you happiness. Without the ability to focus, it's hard to be happy. But the concept that you have to focus on the same thing for a long period of time has nothing to do with what's healthy for the person. It has to do with what the rest of the world can handle. They want to be able to look at you, know what you are, put you in a box, and then book you or ignore you or date you or whatever it is. They want your story to be palatable, to be small enough. And mine isn't, and it never was. And so I learned how to sort of heal and change within the mess. And then at the end of all of that, the beauty of that, and I want to tell you a story from when the kids were little to really example that, but at the end of that, when I look back, what I've discovered is because of the way we did it, because we didn't try to become something we aren't and just pick one thing and all of that, we just healed inside the mess. We, everybody can generalize, and everyone got healthy at a level that's miraculous. So when you do it the traditional way, it looks better in the beginning, but it looks bad at the end. You know, you're on drugs now, you're taking a prescribed medicine, you can't sleep at night, you've got, you know, everything sort of declines. When you do it and you go ahead and you bite the bullet and you clean up the mess from within the mess, it looks messier and worse in the beginning because nobody can sort of get their head around it. But at the end of the day, it's 100% better, and everybody's healed. And it's what we need in our society so that everyone can generalize from business to mental health to parenting to, you know, just teaching to everything. So the quick story, and then I'll let you have a word in edgewise.
Oh, no, it's fine. I mean, I'm loving this. I mean, even people just tuning in, we're talking to Lynette Louise. She is the Brain Broad, and she's just sharing us this journey of how she got involved in autism and being an expert, and we're just loving it. So thank you so much for sharing.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Okay, so here I am. I'm still, you know, pretty kind of challenged in a social way, but super energized and committed and motivated to help my kids. And I've got all eight because they came on board. You know, you're adopting, so you didn't, one minute I'm doing stand-up comedy. I've got 2 kids. I've got 4 kids. I've got 6. Everyone thinks I'm crazy, right, because the number keeps changing because I keep adopting. Anyway, so finally I have 8 kids. And I'm living in this neighborhood, and all – you know, they're all fetal alcohol syndrome, autism, retardation. Like, they're multiply handicapped. So we're fine. You know, it's messy and it's noisy and it's wonderful. And I'm doing stand-up comedy and I'm singing in bars and I'm taking certifications on the brain.
Yeah,
and
I know
you're
singing in bars. After your day at home, you got to get in the bar and start singing. I get that. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, well, actually, it was because I needed to be available for the schools because the schools kept falling apart. So I looked for jobs at night that were short, that wouldn't be 8 hours. So I went, well, I guess I could learn how to sing. I really didn't know. So, but I pulled it off.
Yeah, that comedy, you work 15 minutes and that's full time, and you don't have to take your clothing off. It's perfect.
Perfect. Right, exactly.
You just have to be funny.
Oh my God, it was just, you just did whatever. We even sold oranges at the subway station one day. Like, I mean, whatever you could, you go, hi, I need money again. So here I am, and I've got all these kids, and I'm just surviving it and doing it and loving it and you know, having a life. And all the neighbors are so annoyed by this. Now, it was the first time I came to understand. It was the first time I really got when somebody has 1 or 2 kids and they're walking around going, it's so hard, life's so hard. And especially if someone has like dyslexia or the schools are telling them, well, it's so hard. And you're hearing, it's so hard. And here I am, I'm so busy in my little oasis of mess that I don't know it's so hard. Right?
I love it.
So guess what made it hard? Everybody being mad at me for it not being hard. And then it became almost a nightmare because, you know, there was petitions to get rid of us because we were messy and the kids were weird and they were on the lawn and they're bringing the property values down. I mean, it was crazy. And
the kids
I became
are on the lawn.
Very...
Let's throw them out of the neighborhood. I'm loving this. You know, this is the whole show,
God.
Right? My kids,
oh my
your
God.
Kids are outside. Well, where did you want me to put them in the closet? Yes.
God. So they could get mad at me and then take them away and have one and say, you can have one. Right. So, yeah, no, nobody wanted to inject. When you think of it in comparison, if I move out of the neighborhood, so let's get serious, because if I move out of the neighborhood in comparison, there's nobody saying, look, you can rise up here. Step up. It's not such a big deal. Change who you are. Change what you're doing. Let's, you know, let's figure this out. And that happened to me all the time until I moved to America. So in Canada, this happened to me a lot. And back then, Now there's much. It's much different, but there wasn't much homeschooling and that sort of thing, and that was all met with sort of a raised eyebrow. So I didn't have those options. I kept trying, and like it was just really problematic. Some of the kids were native, and that was where you have different prejudices here. We had a really strong native prejudice. My brother, as a matter of fact, was murdered. He was a native Indian, and he was adopted as well. And so, I mean, it's not what, you know, it's not what the press tells you about every country. Every country has its pockets that are ugly and its pockets that are beautiful. And it's our job to choose to live in the beautiful and then to grow from there. Even if the beauty is a big mess, you know, it's okay. So that was the lesson that I learned at the end of all this is, first of all, you have to heal in the mess. And that's why I do my therapies in people's homes. Because if you try to take, say, an autistic child, since that's my specialty, you take an autistic child and you take them out of the mess and you stick them at a desk and you say, I'm going to teach you here, they learn it at the desk, but they won't use it anywhere else. So you have to actually live within your world that you're going to use the skills in and learn them there, because it's the brain of a challenged person, it just doesn't have enough left over to also do generalizing. And as it turns out, neither do neurotypicals. I mean, we're really bad at generalizing. It's why Google's going to make a fortune off us by encapsulating us in our own marketing choices so that we think that we know the world, but really we're just seeing our version of it based on what's coming to us through our technologies now. So that was a long journey. You asked one question.
So in this journey, finally you became, you have eight children that you raised, and four were in the spectrum of autism. Now, for the audience, what are some of the areas that are, you know, impacted with autism? Like, what does that look like for the parent, the challenge, kind of the challenges or the things that you have to work with and help guide? So for people that are, they hear the word autism, but they don't, like, know.
Right. Okay, so first of all, just for clarity, you must have read, I must have to update my website because I have 10 grandkids.
And, wow, thank you.
You're welcome. And then the four that were on the spectrum were multiply diagnosed, so my kids had other things as well, like they, you know, they had child abuse, fetal alcohol syndrome, retardation, autism. And it was back then, so it took time before we figured out they were sort of all on the spectrum, because the spectrum really wasn't a spectrum yet. So it is historically confusing, and it's confusing even today because the myths sort of misinform people. Let's start with real simple stuff. If you're going, I wonder if my child's autistic because it's in the news all the time and everyone's always talking about autism, and it really is getting an awful lot of attention. So people are hearing that buzzword a lot. Really, you just want to look, is my child pulling away from me? Generally speaking, it starts out looking like a sensory disorder. So I'm going to take it as if somebody's wondering when the child is little, and that makes it simpler and easier for me to explain in the short amount of time we have, but it's certainly much more complex than I'm going to say. So I'll give you an example. Let's say that you have a baby, and you bring the baby home, and and the doctor says, you know, he's having a latching on problem. It's not breastfeeding properly, and you know, you're going, oh, I don't know, maybe with the bottle. But you notice when you give them the bottle, you have to hold the baby away from your body, and the baby doesn't like to look in your eyes. And you're going, wow, what's going on? But if you turn the lights off, all of a sudden it's okay. They'll let you hold them closer, and you know, this is weird. I guess my baby likes the dark. So if you're observant of a child and not panicking, at the very early stages of any kind of sort of show-up of brain difference that's sort of along that sensory pathway, you'll see these kinds of clues. You know, you'll go, oh, so if I'm quiet, we can stare in each other's eyes for hours, but as soon as I talk, they can't. So that isn't necessarily how it'll go. It might be they want me to talk, and they can't look in my eyes unless I talk. The point is it'll be one of the five senses or several of the five senses sort of mixed up, not functioning well in a multiple way. So now these are phases of development for babies anyway. So what happens is folks go, well, it'll change. Well, it'll change. By the time you're calling it a major regression. And this is just one example. There's other examples where it's a quick onset, but I have to pick something to answer.
Right,
so by
sure.
The time, right. So by the time it's a thing that you point to and say, oh, my gosh, my child is different, many steps along the way have happened, millions, where you could have slowly tweaked it. This is what I do. So a quick example of that that really fits this particular scenario is my grandson, my biological grandson, was about 5 months old, and all of a sudden he's twisting his head away and refusing to make eye contact and not wanting anyone to hold him and stuff except his mom. And he was really, really he was unable to sit or anything like that. He was just little. But he would do everything with his muscles to try and avoid eye contact. And I'm like, okay, this isn't good. And we've been through this before, so we're not going to wait. He was also having huge meltdowns and screaming. Like, it's a different sound when someone who's really hurting is tantruming than someone, or, you know, when they're really uncomfortable, than somebody who just really wants to have the, you know, their bottle of milk at this point. So, you know, it really is different, and it's hard to control and hard to help the child. And so he was doing both of these things. He wasn't sleeping at night, and he had been doing fine. So immediately we just implemented a program, and this is without any neuro device or anything like that, because he's so little it was easy to do. Easy but hard work. And that's where the women are separated from the girls, or the men are separated from the boys, or the parents from the you know, the fakers. Because what we did was I designed, and then everyone believed me, and so my family did what I said. I designed a program where we would hold him and play with him, and no matter how badly he tried not to look at us, we would just twist his body so that his eyes would meet ours and go, hey, there you are again, peekaboo. So it was like a sort of contorting body version of peekaboo constantly, and playing and hugging and passing him. So we would pass him when our arms would get tired because he wouldn't want to be close to our bodies. So we were a big family. Here's the blessing. And we could just pass him and go, okay, I can't do any more of you, right? And then my daughter, bless her heart, she would be walking the floor with him all night long. But we never didn't address it and waited. So he's right now actually, you know, there's absolutely zero signs of autism. He's going to get a scholarship to go to college. He's a musical genius. He's a athletic genius. He's like, you just can't see anything. It's tapered off over the years. There was a social anxiety piece. There were all those things. So what I'm saying is, it's if you address it as it shows up, instead of letting what the world tells you, the social anxiety piece, most of these high to mid-level issues on the spectrum can really be handled. And there's lots of supporting studies on that There are supporting studies on that saying that, you know, there is a point at which you can sort of change the story. So that's coming out now. People are becoming aware. And that's horrible in some ways, because if you're a parent and your child is, you know, you look at your child and you go, oh, my gosh, if I'd have known then, you know, 15 years ago, what I'm reading about now, my child might be where Lynette's grandson is. And that's a reality you have to live with and just deal with the guilt and then get in and do it now, because there is no point at which it doesn't work to help your child in every little thing. So it'll work more strongly when they're little, of course. But you're looking at eye contact avoidance. You're looking at social confusion. You're looking at sensory overload. You're looking at sensory confusion. So just think like a mom, and you really will figure out a lot of this. If you listen too much to everybody telling you what's wrong and what you're fated for, you'll just make that true.
Oh. Wow. You know, your advice is, I mean, if people are just tuning in, just a great opportunity to listen to an expert who's spent the last 20 years living what it's like to have children with disabilities, and to get past the labels and to get past what other people might think, and just to help and to do and to make things better. And you just didn't put up any walls and didn't block any of that. So, yay, thank you so much, Lynette. Now, you wrote a book
and the name of your book, Miracles Are Made, A Real Life Guide to Autism. How did that book come about? Is it self-published or where we can find it? Talk a little bit about the book process because people love that.
Okay, so I have three books. The first one is Jeff, A Sexually Realized Spiritual Odyssey of Stepping Into Love. Not self-published, but that publisher is now defunct, and so it's going out of print. And so if you want it, you should grab it. That's sort of the story of me in the mess, and I hadn't healed yet, so it's nice and racy. And then the next one is The Miracles Are Made, and that one was once I had got to the point where I had become a neurotherapist and I was having such good effect, not just with my children, but with all the children that I work with internationally, and I just felt obligated, actually, to put down, nobody really talks about in a broad way the whole story, sort of like, what was it like 20 years ago? What's it like now? Why does your doctor think what your doctor thinks? I wanted to arm parents with case studies that show that it can be done, the hope, a little bit of brain science, some interesting, you know, stories from my life. But I also really wanted to do something that I wasn't seeing being done. And that is weave inside of that the historical perspective on autism and how that is affecting you today. So, you know, a good example of that would be since way back when they thought that children became autistic because the mom didn't love them enough, and it was called refrigerator syndrome, and if the mother wasn't a huggy, lovey, snuggly person, that's why the child became autistic. If your doctor learned that from his doctor and then went to medical school and then revamped it, he still may have vestiges of that in his belief system, or he may have completely flushed it. But whatever, it's going to have caused a ripple. And so when you come across an older doctor and he's kind of got an attitude with you, there's a chance that he's blaming you. Just step away and go to someone else. But don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, because there's an element of that that's actually true. So I believe what happens is the child comes out with this sensory issue that I was describing, and out of respect, the parent goes, ooh, they don't like to be touched, so they back away.
Mm.
And when they back away, this becomes habitual behavior between the two personalities and then the whole family. And everyone goes, ooh, he doesn't like to be touched, ooh, he doesn't like to be touched. I've actually never, ever, ever met a child with autism that doesn't like to be touched. They think they don't, and they say those sentences, and the whole family says it because they've learned it. And everybody in society tells you they don't like to be touched, but they always want to be touched, and they're always desiring of affection. They just have areas of their body that can't handle it. So you might have to squeeze their foot or their hand, but they'll crave it. Like, they want affection. They want connection. So, but you can see how this would evolve into a particular look, so that by the time you step into the doctor's office, you look like the parent who would never snuggle your kid.
Right. It's like self-fulfilling prophecy, but it's not really the right way to healing the situation and making things better. And then
make you autistic. You're literally making it happen by the way you're treating the parents and the teachers and the beliefs and by the information, by the erroneous information we give out, we increase autism. And I swear that's true. And so if you can just see how that would happen. And then the mom's sitting there and feeling blamed. And now then the husband's blaming her. Everyone's blaming her. And so it's not like that now, but there's vestiges of that still. And so then you feel angry with your child. You feel rejected by your child. You feel you hate the doctors. And all of that's in the way now. Where's the healing going to happen? Thank goodness I had so many kids. I was an oasis and too busy to notice all that.
Wow. Now, you wrote a third book after this book. And what's the third book?
The Wingmaker. It's so I wanted a story that was sort of like a comic book superhero story that would sort of be a good family read. So it's a picture book with a rhyming story that's a case study. It's a true story of a girl I worked with. It's inspirational. It shows you, it's really beautiful. And it's short.
Well, The Wingmaker. I love that. Now, you also,
yeah,
I have to say, became a founding faculty member of the upcoming Institute for Totalpreneurship. And part of that will take your work and have courses that are going to be available for people worldwide. So just kind of share that little piece for us as well, and then what's coming up that you're doing, because we only have about 5 more minutes left to our show today, and I hate coming to the end.
So Fix It in 5 is the show slash course you're talking about. And because I believe that you have to learn within the mess, and because I believe that cross-discipline learning is really important, I love that I'm a part of this totalpreneurship situation, because I'm also an entrepreneur. I had to be in order to survive. And I always do better. I learned more about the brain when I was learning about marketing and computers and business. And I learned more about computers and business and marketing when I was learning about the brain. And so what I started to do is realize that when you do cross-discipline learning, you don't have the same barriers. You don't go, oh, I can't believe that because I was taught not, you know, you just go, oh, hey, you know what, that would apply over here. So I am presenting something called Fix It in 5, which is me working inside of Uganda with the whole environment. The mom has no job, they have no money, she's never had government ID, she has a child, they don't know what her diagnosis is, and we just in 5 days change everything. And I believe that by watching that and listening to, so it's like watching a docuseries, but I come in and I tell you the techniques. And all the techniques in every single thing are the same. In the same way that we're all built of the same materials as the frog and the stars and the moon. The techniques are the same. So positioning is something you use when you work with autism, when you work with any brain disorder, when you work with marketing, when you work with selling a house, when you work, everything has the same basic techniques. So this is a cross-discipline approach. And meanwhile, you'll also become fantastic employers, employees, and parents while you watch it.
Wow, so that should be coming up pretty soon, and depending on when people are listening to this, we will make sure that we put a link. I need the right link to that program so we can share with our audience. Now, for people to find you, they can definitely go to your website, and we posted here, LynetteLouise.com. Is there any other sites or social things that you want to invite them to be part of?
Yes, LynetteLouise.com is fantastic for teaching, acting, speaking, all of that. If you want to go to my other website that's more therapeutic website, brainbody.net. And I'm on all the social media, Lynette Louise, Lynette L. Louise sometimes if Lynette Louise is taken. So I've got 4 Facebook pages and Twitter and all that. I think the easiest way is to just Google the Brain Broad, because I'm known as the Brain Broad. I travel abroad. I carry a big brain. I work on brains. I had to be abroad to raise all these kids. It's a perfect fit. And
Absolutely.
So you just put the Brain Broad in your Google search, and you know my radio shows will come up, my podcast, my YouTube, my all that stuff.
So talk about the how often do you do episodes online for radio talk shows yourself? What do you have that you're broadcasting?
I have a new spin on Autism Answers that's bi-monthly. So twice a month. I always confuse bi-monthly, bi-weekly. I'm like, whatever, it's twice a month. I have one called The Brain Broad Builds a Brain, and that's also twice a month. So 1 week I do one, and 1 week I do the other. 1 week I do one, and 1 week I do the other. And The Brain Broad Builds a Brain is all, you know, all challenges, whereas the new spin on autism is more focused on autism itself.
Awesome. And with all that, you're still working on your PhD, and so pretty soon we'll be calling you Dr. Lynette Louise. So that's just very exciting. It's always amazing when people are, you know, they've out there, they've been in the world, and then they're going back to, you know, get additional education and credentials. So, you know, shout out, thanks, and, you know, congrats to everybody who's, you know, who's working in that arena. And what else would you like to share as a last message to people, inspirational or about the brain, before we go for the day?
Success in life is a series of choices. If you get overwhelmed by looking at, you should always have an end goal so you know where to step, regardless of whether it's mental health or whether it's your business or whether it's just your relationships. It's always just a series of choices. So you know what your end goal is, you know what you're trying to do. Now start making your series of choices. So today, I just flew in late at night. I'm exhausted, and I went, what's my series of choices? How do I have a great day? I do the radio show, and I do a good job of it. I bring myself to it. And then afterwards, I'm going to have a coffee. So it's just a series of choices. Don't make it a big deal.
Well, I love that advice. Thank you. I'm your host, Lori Wilk. It's been great to be here today with Lynette Louise, the Brain Broad, and definitely get on her website, follow her, and enjoy all her words of wisdom until we get together again. Be successful and be safe. Goodbye for now. Thank you so much, Lynette. Talk to you soon.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. Bye now.